The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Hello, hello, hello. This is the Thunderbolt for June 11th, 2021. I pulled some pieces out of the archive for this week's show, but first, Harry Shearer is going to describe how Barack Obama is sorry. Not.
Sorrier than the Ritz Hotel. If your suite is bedeviled by lice. Sorrier than Exxon about the loss of Arctic sea ice. Sorrier than a schoolboy when his parents catch him swearing. Sorrier than Uber about the disruption caused by sharing. My sorrow is far deeper than a sinkhole in Arizona. My sorrow is way stronger than espresso brewed in Kona. I'm much sorrier than the Volkswagen guys when it was revealed they were cheating. I'm sorrier than even I am when my wife sees me overeating. I'm truly beset by the deepest regret that my generals made up a story. I know you're outraged and you can't be assuaged, but on the other hand, I'm sorry. Sorry about all the bloodshed and the patients burning in beds. I'm sorry the generals and colonels and sergeants just weren't using their heads. I'm sorry we had a hospital, if that's really what our targets were. But we're having an investigation, so I'm sorry I can't be sure. I'm sorry you think it's a war crime since I won a Nobel Peace Prize. I'm sorry to have to remind you, but we really are the good guys. I'm sorry you're leaving Kunduz. They could use some medical care. Although I'm sorry to say, most people who can are getting the hell out of there. It causes me pain that one of our planes should go back to the laboratory. So I hope you can see that if it's up to me, I'm sorry to tell you. I'm sorry.
Ah, yes. Here we are again. So much of the news is so dispiriting these days that we are always happy to report any good news that happens to come our way. However, I should warn you that while this first story is ultimately good news, some listeners may have concerns over the fact that your nose hairs are the scene of an epic, monumental, ongoing, and thoroughly lethal battle. Yes, kid. It turns out that your humble nose hairs provides an unusually fecund environment for a variety of creatures of the microbial persuasion. Now, while you might be okay with these cute little critters setting up shop inside your nose, the problem is that some of them are quite homicidal. And some of them have absolutely no respect for the human host who supplies their bountiful paradise of snot. It turns out, in fact, that there's a 30% chance that the dreaded MRSA superbug bacteria has set up housekeeping in your snot locker, and that they are at this very moment raising their children up there, even as you listen to the Thunderbolt. But never fear, you possessors of noses. We have a brave white knight willing to charge into the melee against these dastardly villains and turn the tide in the battle of the nose hairs. But make no mistake, the fighting is fierce, and the stakes are high, for this is a fight over prime strategic territory that contains a cornucopia of mucus and rich bacterial fodder. And in some cases, these bacteria are also subject to regular injections of cocaine, meaning that the stakes may literally be high. The BBC is reporting that by studying the casualty figures in this battle, some German researchers may have found an entirely new class of antibiotics that may prove effective against the new superbugs in general and against MRSA in particular. Yippee! Now, the last time that an entirely new class of antibiotics was discovered was back in the 80s. Nearly all previous antibiotics have been derived from bacteria that live in the soil. But these folks are saying that the human body itself is a possible new reserve. Our enemy in the battle for the nose hairs is a type of bacteria called Staphylococcus aureus, which includes the dreaded superbug MRSA. And as I said, MRSA bacteria are found in the nose hairs of 30% of the world's population. So why isn't MRSA found in 100%? It seems that we have valiant, if microscopic, allies. A According to these scientists, the 70% of the population who do not have MRSA hanging out in their nose hairs have instead a competing bacteria called Staphylococcus leucodunensis that evidently is very good at kicking the asses of Staphylococcus aureus. The scientists are now experimenting and genetically playing with Staphylococcus leucodunensis to make it even badder ass, and they think they can come up with something to take on MRSA sometime in the fairly near future.
Thank you, good night.
Thank you. It will be years of tests and trials, but a possible new class of antibiotics that target superbugs, I would say, qualifies as good news. And stay tuned to the Thunderbolt for further developments. There are three different science podcasts that I try to listen to every week. Last week, Big Picture Science, a project of the SETI Institute, and usually a most excellent science program, did a piece on a new technology called clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats.
Every day I get the cue. To get on a bus that takes me to you.
Or CRISPR.
I'm so nervous I just sit and smile. The house is only another mile. Thank you, driver, for getting me here. You'd be an inspector, head.
CRISPR represents a new, quick, easy, and supposedly precise tool to change the coding of specific targeted genes whilst conducting genetic engineering.
Just to talk to my baby.
The hosts of Big Picture Science
each day
were nearly breathless in their enthusiasm as they described this new gene editing technology that is so precise and so easy to use.
Magic Boss!
It will allow
Magic Boss!
Nearly anyone
Magic Boss!
To experiment. Genetic engineering. CRISPR can specifically target one single gene and change it. With CRISPR technology, as Big Picture Science explains it, it is possible to edit a single gene in a manner similar to editing a single word in a digital document. You simply tell your program to replace all the X's with Y's, and suddenly every X turns into a Y. As they began describing this new technology and its possible benefits, and the more excited the hosts became as they were describing it, the more alarmed I became. Yes, there are numerous potential benefits that seem nearly miraculous. In CRISPR technology, probably lies the cure for several genetically inherited diseases, for instance. The people that BBS interviewed were from an institution called Innovative Genomics Initiative at the University of California at Berkeley. Their website is innovativegenomics.org. And the scientist that BBS interviewed was very pleasant and informative. And he reassured everyone that the adults were in the room and that everyone was being very careful and very responsible with everything that they were doing. He was also overflowing with endless details about CRISPR and the wondrous potential that lies in this technology. They even had a clever, entertaining, and educational skit about how CRISPR works. They used a word replacement program to change a verse of Shakespeare into a verse from The Wizard of Oz, which I found oddly appropriate, if for reasons I suspect the show's producers had not considered. Then, the BPS people followed this with yet another interview, this time with a biohacker who is literally using CRISPR technology to do GE experiments in his kitchen. And then he is sharing his results with an online community of other amateur genetic engineers. Yes, I just said amateur genetic engineers. The hacker that was interviewed explain the importance of placing all your GE manipulation tools into the machinery of the cell itself, so that you can produce the desired outcome. This guy even explains that when you're dealing with 10 to the 15th power number of cells, then some of your things will stick and some won't. Thus, it is largely a matter of trial and error. Yes, I just said he is conducting amateur genetic engineering by trial and error. Finally, at the very end of the piece, the host does briefly mention, quote, "There are a number of ethical problems with this technology, and for all of its promise, there is some peril."
Try to hypnotize me, try to mesmerize me, try to destabilize the world.
But they don't bother to detail such things any further. One of numerous very serious problems with all of this is that even in cases of genetically inherited diseases, highly varied suites of genes usually cause the vast majority of such diseases. And all of these genes all interact with other genes in various other ways as well. And as they seem to have to keep learning over and over again, when one is dealing with insanely complex systems that have evolved over 1 billion years, everything usually interacts with everything else. If you change one thing, then you are very likely to change a lot of other things as well. There are other questions that the hosts of Big Picture Science barely touched upon, though, as well. What about unintended side effects? and potential catastrophic consequences if everyone and their grandmother were to start tinkering with the basic building blocks of life.
And you'll say,
what about unintended side effects and potential catastrophic consequences resulting from the fact that different genes often act in completely different manners when they are placed in different contexts? Also, since such work often involves transferring genes from one species to another species, what about potential cross-species contamination? A bizarre new genetic characteristic that have never before been seen in nature? And how long before pathogens begin figuring out how to navigate this new cross-species highway? And what about fascists who want to use this technology to literally create classes of people, literally rewired to do whatever the rulers need them to do? This can include eliminating all conscience and all morals from all of their police and all of their soldiers. And finally, what about the fact that if you seriously then there is no taking it back, as whatever catastrophe you just unleashed is now indelibly embedded into the genome itself. After Big Picture Science, I listened to another science program called Quirks and Quarks, a production of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And they also had a piece on CRISPR. Also began their program by extolling the many virtues and potentials of CRISPR technology.
Now the smiling potion of you.
But their lead-in was this.
It really doesn't bother me. Watch that car.
There is a fly in the ointment. Q&Q interviewed a scientist that described discovering a single gene that was causing blindness in mice. And he described how they used CRISPR technology to change that gene and to cure these mice. And subsequent generations did indeed stop inheriting that gene. However,
loneliness is such a dread.
They also followed up with a full gene sequence of the mice to see if there had been any other changes. And lo and behold, there were not only numerous other changes in the genetic wiring that had also come about due to their tinkering, but they were not changes that the scientists had predicted might happen. And in fact, the changes usually had no obvious connection to the blindness gene that could be made at all. Ironically, they also used the word processor metaphor to describe this phenomenon as well. It was as if you told your word processor to change all your X's into Y's, but then it also changed a whole bunch of other random things into other random things on other pages as well. And maybe those changes were harmless, but maybe those changes made the entire paragraph, or even the entire page, incoherent. The scientists explained that it was, quote, hard to tell at this point what these other genes did. Now, this gentleman thus acknowledged the risks, but he thought that a cost-benefit analysis should be applied to this technology. He felt that targeting exceptionally vile diseases was worth the risk of unknown side effects. Manipulating genes so that your kid can have blonde hair is not. This stuff is very scary, and the tech is now moving very fast. It is literally being crowdsourced, in fact. So keep an eye on this stuff. In the meanwhile, it's time for a station break. The Thunderbolt will be back in just a moment. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. In an explosive, the Thunderbolt makes history this week by announcing the very first candidacy for the 2016 presidential election. Yes, since each election cycle gets earlier and earlier every cycle, the Thunderbolt has decided to jump the gun and get on the 2016 election while everyone else is still focusing on the boring midterms. But first, let's review our choices. At this point, there are exactly two choices for the 2016 presidential election. We will be clubbed on the head by the Republicans, or we will be stabbed in the back by the Democrats. At least everyone believes that those are the only two choices. And a funny thing about that, it is actually true. But only because everyone believes it is true. And if everyone would just stop believing it is true, then it would no longer be true. And so, the Thunderbolt now officially declares that the official Thunderbolt policy for the 2016 presidential election is to encourage everyone to stop believing that having rigged voting machines deciding which of two lying corporate fascists that Wall Street is going to install in the White House every 4 years is the only two choices we have. And in that spirit, the Thunderbolt is now proud to revive a veteran presidential candidate from all the way back in 1984, and who, under the sponsorship and tutelage of the esteemed elder statesman, Wavy Gravy, ran against a B-grade movie actor turned presidential candidate, Ronald Reagan. Yes, as impossible as the dream seems, the Thunderbolt is proud to be the first to announce that 2016 will witness the revival of the Nobody for President campaign. Yes, let it ring out from the mountaintop. U.S. out of North America. Nobody for president in 2016. After all, nobody can end hunger and poverty. Nobody can bring an end to war. Nobody can provide the perfect society. Nobody can even cure the common cold. And if nobody can do all these things, then I think that nobody should be president. Let's hear it. Nobody for president in 2016. Numerous times throughout my life, I have intentionally placed myself into dangerous situations. Danger can add a lot of spice to a life.
I would like to reach out my hand, only sail, only tell you to run.
There is often a lot to be learned in dangerous situations.
Well, pick me up with golden hand, only sail, only tell you.
Facing danger can intensify the life experience.
Well, I would like to hold my little hand. How we will run, how we will cry. I would like to hold my little hand. How we will run, how we will cry.
And how you deal with dangerous situations is a good way to test and develop your personal character. However, I've also always been fully aware that the luxury of living my life in this manner, and the mere fact that I often had to go out of my way to consciously seek out dangers,
I would like to reach out my hand.
I fully understand that these luxuries are afforded to me by the mere fact that I am a white man living in America. Were I a person of color, on the other hand, I wouldn't need to do anything but live my frigging life, and I would daily face a large number and a wide variety of dangers. I might have the wrong cop see me at the wrong time. I run the risk to not get that job the less qualified white man would get. I would take serious risk simply by driving a car. Or I might have some Starbucks barista cop an attitude at me. People of color don't need to go out of their way to consciously seek out danger. Their lives are quite spicy enough as it is. I am convinced that one of our central goals as a society really needs to be the extending of white privilege to everyone. Because when everyone has it, then it will no longer be privilege, but simple reality. Just like it is already for white people. Ultimately, though, the world is not really a safe place for any of us.
I would like to reach out my hand, only say, only tell you to run.
All the way, all the way, nobody say, nobody on.
Volcanic eruptions, for instance, have very little racial awareness. There are all kinds of people everywhere, and many of those people probably have opinions and worldviews that both you and I would find truly offensive. And there are even people out there who wish to cause both of us harm. The difference for people of color is that they have a lot more of all that. And the difference for people of color is that most of those additional dangers are manufactured by our culture rather than inherent in anything.
I started to drown in your vision. I looked through your windows as I flew through the air. All I could find was a river in pieces. Cowboy, should have been a martyr.
The drive to create islands of relative safety in this dangerous world is a worthy and even necessary thing for humans to do. Having a safe space where people can just be themselves without having to worry about offensive, disagreeable, or dangerous people is a wonderful thing to have. And people of color especially have a dearth of such spaces. But we need to always remember that a safe space is almost by definition not a public space. Because by creating a safe space, you are now hindering other people's personable freedom to be whatever they are. If you happen to find whatever they are to be offensive or whatever, often there is very good reason to be offended by them. Other times, though, such things are not so clear. And especially in such cases as these, that is when imposing your thing upon others, as opposed to debating the merits or demerits or whatever, can become problematic. When you attempt to force things upon everyone else, as opposed to debating the merits or demerits or whatever, then that is called censorship. That is called suppression. That is called ideology. That is fine in private spaces. It is not fine in public spaces. You cannot turn the whole world into a safe space, and you would not want to even if you could, because making the whole world into a safe space would require suppressing anything that anyone finds offensive or threatening, which would require forcing everyone to at least pretend to think the same things about everything, which would require installing a totalitarian dictatorship with thought control mechanisms, which would require denying reality and driving it underground, rather than actually changing anything. Recently, ex-Evergreen professor Dr. Brett Weinstein recently testified to Congress about all of this. In 2016, Dr. Weinstein disagreed with some tactical decisions that were made by some anti-oppression student activists at the Evergreen State College. Dr. Weinstein felt that as a teacher, his job was to teach his students how to think, not what to think. And he didn't think his students were thinking very clearly on this tactic. The details of this controversy are debatable. And that is the whole point. Dr. Weinstein actually had some very good and rational reasons for his criticism of their tactic. And had the students chosen to listen to him, but the students had absolutely no interest in rationality or debate. They sought to impose their ideology and tactics, and they were not going to brook any form of dissent. Several of them came right out and said they had no interest in debate. They chose instead to scream slogans and demands into people's faces, rather than debating Dr. Weinstein. They instead slandered him, misrepresented him, shouted him down, and personally demonized him. The students implied that anyone who disagreed with them in any way or in any manner was ipso facto a white supremacist and a racist. Excuse me, but I cannot think of any way to cause more harm to your cause than falsely accusing people like Brett Weinstein of being racist. You lose all credibility when you do crap like that. Numerous faculty and students at Evergreen that actually agreed with Dr. Weinstein have since contacted me and stated that they were afraid to stand up for him at the time because they feared being demonized and attacked themselves. So WTF does that say? And indeed, for expressing his disagreement, Dr. Weinstein was himself eventually driven off campus, and he does no longer teaching at the Evergreen State College. So WTF does that say? That is called censorship. That is called suppression. That is called ideology. That is fine in private spaces. It is not fine in public spaces. I would highly recommend checking out Dr. Weinstein's testimony to Congress on this issue. You can find it on YouTube, because this appearance of self-appointed PC police with their forced imposition of ideological norms, and especially their violent attacks upon anyone that ever disagrees with them in any way, is quickly becoming a very scary thing. So think about it. And in the meanwhile, it's time to get to work. All right. So I'm going to play some music now. Since this week's show was largely science-based, I'll continue with that meme with a band out of Bellingham called Melody Sheep, who sing songs about science. Check it out.
We're all connected to each other biologically, to the earth chemically, to the rest of the universe atomically.
I think nature's imagination is so much greater than man's. He's never gonna let us relax.
We live in an in-between universe where things change all right, but according to patterns, rules, or as we call them, laws of nature.
I'm just a star standing on a planet. Really, I'm just a speck. I'm just a speck compared with a star. The planet is just another speck. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space.
There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of specks.
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. Cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are away from the cosmos to know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns. We have traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
We're all connected to each other biologically, to the earth chemically, to the rest of the universe atomic.
I find it elevating and exhilarating to discover that we live in a universe which permits the evolution of molecular machines as intricate and subtle as we.
I know that the molecules in my body are traceable to phenomena in the cosmos. That makes me want to grab people in the street and say, have you heard this?
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are away from the cosmos to know itself.
There's this tremendous mass of waves all over in space, which is the light bouncing around the room, going from one thing to the other. And it's all really there, really, really there. But you gotta stop and think about it, about the complexity and really get the pleasure. It's all really there, really, really there. The inconceivable nature of nature. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space.
There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of specks.
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are away from the cosmos and know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns. We have traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
This universe. The universe is in us.
Yes, the universe is in us.
Every atom in your body came from a star that exploded. You are all stardust. You are all stardust. From a star that exploded.
Look up at the night sky. We are part of it. The universe itself exists within us. We are stardust in the highest exalted way. Called by the universe. Reaching out to the universe. We are stardust in the highest exalted way. Reaching out to the universe. With these methods and tools of science.
Stand in the middle and enjoy everything both ways. The tininess of us, the enormity of the universe.
The atoms that make up the human body are traceable to the crucible that cooked light elements into heavy elements. These stars went unstable in their later years, and then exploded, scattering their enriched guts across the galaxy. Look up at the night sky. We are part of it. The universe itself exists within us. We are stardust in the highest exalted way. Called by the universe, reaching out to the universe. We are stardust in the highest exalted way, reaching out to the universe with these methods and tools of science. We are stardust in the highest exalted way, reaching out. The universe itself exists within us.
That tune was called We Are Stardust, and that was preceded by We Are All Connected by Melody Sheep out of Bellingham. We'll see you next week. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com. And we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And you may want to grab a pen or something, because I'm about to give you some information. If you like what you hear here on the Thunderbolt, then the Thunderbolt archives are stored at dana98501.wordpress.com. That's DANA98501, which is the downtown Olympia zip code, .wordpress.com. And if you would like to continue hearing the Thunderbolt, you can contribute to our cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. And
thank you very much.